Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Packers Podcast. We are back from our bi-week hiatus, and I'm here, as always, with Bob McGinn. My name is Michael Cohen, and we thank you guys for joining us. Bob, for the second week in a row, was it second week in a row or two out of three that you went to the Meyer Theater there and saw a little show?
Yeah, I guess it has been twice here in rapid succession. So on Tuesday night, veteran listeners of this podcast will remember one of my songs was The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Well, I saw the singer-songwriter, Mr. Gordon Lightfoot.
How was
the Meyer?
This was a rescheduled show?
It was. It was supposed to be in March. Gordon got sick, so he came here on November 3. He's 76 years old. The place was sold out, 1,200 people, and we had good seats for a change, and it was outstanding. He had four guys with him, been with him for years. I mean, every word of every song, he's written himself, his lyrics, melody, everything. Yeah, his voice has changed a little bit, but very impressive.
How did he compare to Mr. Leon Russell?
He's about 3 years older than Leon. More vibrant than Leon in terms of mobility.
Well, Leon could hardly get across the stage.
Leon had no break.
Right.
Gordon had one after about an hour.
You're allowed to when you cross 75. That's the rule.
Yeah. And his song before the break was the Edmund Fitz.
Okay.
And it was pretty stunning. I think everybody in the place just, boy, you hear that haunting song come on, and that guy's up there doing this. And this is the 40th anniversary of that sinking, November 10 of 75. So Gordon and his band are going up to Whitefish Point, up by Sault Ste. Marie. Had they reached Whitefish Point, they would have been fine. That was 15 miles away. For a 40th memorial service on, is that Monday or Tuesday? Tuesday the 10th. I'd like to be there for that. It was a wonderful moment.
What was your favorite song? Was it that one that he played? Or did you like some others?
Yes, it was that one. Yeah. I liked almost all of them. His lyrics are like, to me, the greatest lyricist I've heard is Bob Dylan. And he's kind of right in there with Dylan. He's regarded as Canada's greatest songwriter.
How long did he play for?
Almost 2 hours.
Wow.
With about a 10-minute break.
So a little longer than Leon.
Yeah. It was impressive.
And his accompaniment was talented?
Very. All solid guys, you know, in their 60s, really did the job, yep.
Very good. Very good. This week, I spent my one free evening jumping into a basketball league here in Green Bay. I've taken the spot of Tyler Dunn on the Media Mafia team, as I believe it's called. It's a bunch of local journalists here, TV, radio, print guys, and we play at in a local men's league here. We're sponsored, actually, by Hagemeister Park, right downstairs from this building here. So it was fun. We got out there. We had a scrimmage. We ran the opposing team to death, fast breaks up and down the court, and it was a good time.
I was at Green Bay Southwest High School.
Yeah, I'd never been there before. Mm-hmm. I was impressed with the gym. Nice facility.
Very nice gym.
Three courts they had.
I played in those leagues in Green Bay till age 39, Mike.
And then what prompted your retirement?
The team kind of broke up, and then I was getting injured, and I sure miss it. The unselfish part of basketball, I love that, man.
It's fun.
Winning and sharing the basketball, it's a great, great thing.
A lot of fun. A lot of fun. So that was a good time. We ran up and down the floor for 2 hours nonstop, and now I'm sore this morning. So we are recording this podcast here on Thursday, and we are excited to say that we have a sponsor now for our podcast. We would like to thank the Cannon & Dunphy Law Firm, Wisconsin Law Firm, for their support. They are now the exclusive sponsor of a lot of our Packers content, so we'd like to thank them for what they're providing to us, and we hope you think of them if you have any needs in the legal department. And with that, we will get into what we saw a few days ago. It was quite a game that we saw in Denver. I think it was an eye-opener for a lot of people across the country, writers, fans, reporters, everybody. I wasn't expecting it to go the way that it did. I guess, what was your broad impression of how you left the field there at Sports Authority Field in Mile High?
Kind of stunned, Mike. I really was. I thought a lot about it, but Denver had not played a game anywhere to this level. I expected Green Bay to win this game, not by a lot, but and I thought twice about it before I made my picks against my son and my friends in this our little 15-year pool. But I went with the Packers, and I just thought the way Peyton Manning had played and Green Bay's pass rush, I put that in the view of the game, that they would get in Peyton's face and unsettle and stop that offense from scoring more than 17. I thought Green Bay could score 20 and would win it.
Let's talk about that pass rush a little bit. You know, obviously you talked about it in your Rate the Packers earlier this week, but what did you make of what Green Bay was or wasn't able to do against Peyton?
I mean, I thought Ty Sambrello would be back at left tackle. One scout thought he was, if not their best, one of their top two offensive linemen. They're already down Ryan Clady at left tackle, and this kid had done a good job as a rookie.
He's out for the season now.
Yeah, he's doubtful. He doesn't play. So you got Ryan Harris, a career journeyman, really, at left tackle. Kid from Michigan, Schofield, who wasn't that great in college. He's at right tackle. And inside, you got a really undersized first-year starter, Paradis. And then you got Vasquez and Evan Mathis, who hadn't been playing that well. The whole line hadn't been playing that well. And Green Bay's pass rush, Peyton's not sacked. He was only knocked down, I don't know, twice, three times.
Yeah, two or three.
It was awful.
It really was. And one of the things that sort of surprised me a little bit was, and I asked actually defensive coordinator Dom Capers about this on Monday after the game. I said, there were a lot of instances where Peyton got the ball out quickly. And, you know, that's going to nullify the pass rush to a certain degree. But there are also some moments where he held the ball for a decent amount of time. And I said, your four-man rush couldn't get close to him at all, unless they were bringing pressure. And even then, it hardly got there. But the lack of a pass rush from a four-man group, I thought, was pretty startling, because flip the coin the other way, and what Denver did with its, you know, regular rush, they brought blitzes as well. But, I mean, it was just night and day, the pressure they could get one to the other. So it was, you know, I think there was, on the first or second play of the game, you and I both noted this, Julius Peppers had a tremendous bull rush, just knocked a guy onto his back. And after that, it was over. It was done. There was no pass rush the rest of the game.
No, I mean, you know, Daniels had some decent rushes, but he was facing a lot of double teams with the guard and Paradis, and he got pretty close. You know, I think he played the best of the front seven, but he didn't get there. And the rest of them.
Well, how'd you think Raji looked in his first game back from that groin problem?
Not as good. No penetration against the run. I mean, against that zone scheme, you need a one technique who can do some things, you know, either backdoor or beat a guy across his face so he can't reach block him and do something in the backfield. There was nobody forcing any knocking off blockers or doing any of that stuff. So I didn't think he was very sharp. Pass rushers outside, Elliott, Neal, Perry, and Peppers, just not enough against that line.
Yeah, agreed. It was an unsightly performance for sure. I don't know. It was interesting. What'd you think of Pinnell? We got to see a few more snaps out of him than we had recently, because it seemed like Raji was limited a little bit in his snap count.
Yeah, there's a few flashes in there.
I know he made one nice tackle on a running play in the hole, I remember.
Same with Guyon. There's just a little bit of a flash. Dayton Jones made a couple plays against the run, you know, which was impressive. And then the secondary. I mean, you know, when you mentioned earlier how there were times he was really getting rid of the ball quick, you know, Hayward chose to play off Demaryius Thomas, and I get that. Thomas is a huge man, and, you know, he can just kind of manhandle you at the line and get away just real quick. So I understand that, but, boy, he played really soft, and the ball was just going to Thomas a lot.
Well, speaking of Peyton, I mean, he throws for 340 yards. He had one interception late in the game that didn't really do anything to influence the outcome of the game. You know, for as poorly as he had played coming into Sunday's game, what was your impression of the way that he was able to sort of right the ship a little bit after their bye week?
He had 2 weeks, right?
Yes, he did.
With Kubiak, and they did a beautiful job.
They really did.
I mean, do you think... Now, you don't know that much about Pat Bowlen, who actually went to high school here down in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, at an old former Catholic school, Campion High School. And we've written that several times in our paper. But did you think that crowd was any inspired or incited by the Bowlen pregame stuff?
I didn't really
and
notice.
Post-game.
I didn't notice that much of a difference. I think, well, honestly, I thought that our impressions of the crowd were skewed slightly by the fact that our press box hung over the stadium. Hung over the bleachers, I should say. So the guys underneath were banging on the underside of the press box, and it was loud and it was vibrating. But I didn't get the sense that it was a raucous crowd the way, you know, when you guys go to Seattle.
Did you think, what did you think of the Green Bay Packer population in that crowd?
Oh, I was impressed with it. Yeah. I remember when we pulled into the stadium, me, you, and Tom, and we were just driving through, there was green and gold everywhere. It always, you know, the team's always going to travel well, and, you know, there's always pockets of them in New York City and the West Coast and things like that. But, you know, I wasn't expecting this many Packer fans in Denver, and even our hotel, there were Packer fans left and right in the lobby. It was a good showing, I thought.
So it's not like they were out there by themselves.
No, definitely not.
I mean, there was noise and crowd noise of support and all this. It was just a real flat performance.
Yeah, I agree with that. Definitely a flat performance. And I think what impressed me about Peyton, too, was, you know, obviously he doesn't have any mobility left. He can't run. He pulled off two bootlegs.
Yeah, he did.
And they looked good. They were naked bootlegs. You know, one, I think, got Peppers. No, was it Peppers?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One was Peppers, and then I think the other one was Neal on the other side. And he rolled out, completed passes both times. It was as if that wasn't even on the minds of the outside backers that this guy could possibly pull off a bootleg at 39. And he didn't look that bad moving outside either.
No, he didn't. I'm sure he hasn't done a lot of that in his career, and they've practiced the heck out of this, and he's been a good soldier, I suppose, to an extent. He wants to win, and he did him well. They had that outside zone run game going so well that everybody flowed towards it, and I get that, and then he'd come back the other way.
Yeah, it was terrific. That outside run game in particular, you and I both noted it in our pieces where we watched the film, just the ability of the tight ends for the Broncos to really control the corner and push those outside backers inside on the stretch plays was tremendous. Right at the beginning of the game, Peppers gets pushed inside for like a 16-yard run on one side, and Palmer gets stuck behind a sea of bodies so he can't get there, and then you flip it to the other side, and I can't remember which backer it was over there, but Owen Daniels comes in the next time and pushes somebody inside, and I thought their tight ends did a very nice job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so now they acquired Vernon Davis out there.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. What did you think of that move? Were you surprised? I wasn't surprised Davis moved. I was surprised he went to Denver.
Well, Elway apparently really wanted Joe Thomas, huh? Mm-hmm. The left tackle. You know, he loses Sam Brailo. He knows Ryan Harris isn't going to be able to really... Well, he's got his fingers crossed he can win the Super Bowl with Ryan Harris, but he doesn't have a third tackle. To get Joe Thomas, you got to give... You're one. Maybe you got to give two ones.
That's what the reports were. Cleveland wanted two ones for him.
Yeah. I mean, Denver's pick next year is going to be in the high 20s or 30s. So, yeah, that's a bold strike. And so he gets Vernon Davis. Now he's got Owen Daniels and Virgil Green. Virgil Green, right?
Yeah.
Virgil, yeah. Now that's better than what the Packers are playing with.
Yes, it is. I actually thought Virgil Green was a pretty decent player.
He can run good. He played well in this game. And, you know, Daniels is a sneaky guy.
Yeah.
And so they got Vernon Davis. Now, I don't know where his head is now. He's had a disappointing year, injuries, all kinds of innuendo out there regarding his season.
Nobody to throw him the ball.
Yeah. But as recently as last year, I mean, Green Bay fans know that this guy can get deep. He can threaten the middle. And they get him for, what, a swap of six, wasn't it? Or a swap?
No, they gave 2 sixth-round picks, and in return they got Davis and a 7.
Okay, all right.
So not very much.
Enough, but, you know, yeah, okay. He's 31. He's making a lot of money.
Sure.
I don't know.
It's interesting to me, too, because, you know, now this just adds a third weapon into that mix at tight end, and... The Broncos were able to exploit what seems to be a repetitive weakness for the Packers, which is Micah Hyde defending tight ends. We saw it against the Chargers, where Gates and Ladarius Green just would repeatedly run over the middle, and Phillip Rivers would find them on crossing routes, and then they'd run for yards after catch. And, you know, Hyde was never so badly out of position that it was a blown coverage. He was just always a yard, 2 yards behind, and they would fit in those crossing routes. And we saw the same thing with Denver. Peyton Manning went to Owen Daniels. He went to Virgil Green. And, you know, it just seemed like for whatever reason, Micah Hyde can't keep up with these tight ends across the middle. And, you know, I think it's a legitimate concern. You know, Hyde spoke yesterday in the locker room and he said, you know, I've got to play better. I have to do better than that. And then he said something that I thought was really interesting. He said that there have been times when he's been in good position with his coverage, but he said the tight ends now are so big and so physical that even when he's next to a guy, when he tries to reach in with a hand or reach across, he's either not strong enough or just can't get there because the tight ends are so physically large that they pull in these passes and make good coverage look like mediocre coverage. So I don't know. I think it's interesting that teams have really exploited that one-on-one matchup with Hyde against tight ends over the middle.
Palmer needs to do a better job of helping Hyde or whoever else is running on these very within 5 yards shallow crossers by jamming some of these people, knocking them off. It's right in front of him. This happened either once or twice. I can't recall in this game. Destroy the guy. That's what Sam Barrington used to do. There's Junior Seau used to play that way, just hammer those wide receivers. Have them running with a head on a swivel, you know, coming across the middle. Doesn't take that much, doesn't knock you that far out of your job responsibility to chuck a guy like that. And then that route's gone, man. I didn't think Palmer played very well, but, you know, another thing on Vernon Davis, he's a pretty good run blocker.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's, you know, he's only 6'3". He's not a real massive guy in terms of weight, but I think he's really improved as a run blocker over the years, and I'm not saying he's great, but I'm sure he's definitely better than the NFL average at that position as a run blocker, and I think Denver's going to utilize that too.
Now let's flip to the other side of the ball a little bit. Let's talk about the Packers' running game. You know, there was so much made coming out of the bye week with, you know, is Lacy healthy? Is Lacy overweight? Why didn't Lacy play a lot? James Starks goes over 100 yards, scores 2 touchdowns, but then he comes out of it with a hip injury. So going into this game, it was very clear that Starks was going to be a little bit limited. He wasn't able to practice in full during the week. What did you make of what we saw from the running game?
Early on, it was good.
Yes. Lacy looked okay.
Yeah, he did. I like Denver's front. I thought Sylvester Williams, the player the Packers took, Dayton Jones, one of many that the Packers took over, took at 26 in 2013. I thought he really played well against Lindsley. Wolf was their player of the game, as voted by the Denver coaches, defensive player of the game. I mean, he did a lot of good things against Bulaga, specifically in the run game, not allowing himself to get cut off. And then there was problems with Green Bay's tight end at the point of attack, missing blocks. So a promising start to the run game just kind of disintegrated, and then it just became throw, and away it went.
Do you think that the 17-0 deficit prevented the Packers from trying to stick with the run when they had early success, or do you think they just went away from it?
They just didn't have the ball that much, you know, Mike?
Yeah.
Was it 46 snaps? It
keeps getting lower every week.
So, yeah, you're down 17, you fail on a third down, and then you get the ball back, and then time's starting to become an issue, and I can't say they abandoned the run.
Sure.
But I'm sure they would have liked to have done it more.
Yeah, I agree. And I think he was better against the pass than he was the run, but I thought Smith inside for the Broncos played a good game as well.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, mm-hmm. He's a tough old veteran, Antonio Smith.
Yep, very good player. Also, sticking with the Packers offense, but putting it in the context of what we saw in the back half, man, that Denver secondary played well. Holy cow, those corners were good.
Three of them. And you know the fourth, Kayvon Webster, is supposedly a really good player too, based on exhibition tape. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they can match that with anybody in the league, and yeah, they just manned up.
They were able to play their base defense a lot against what the Packers call their nickel offense, which is essentially three wide receivers and a tight end and a back. 11 personnel, and I think that changed the whole game because they had the extra guy in the box, the extra size guy in the box to be able to stop the run. And they knew that they could play man on these Packers receivers. And boy, did they do it with swagger. I was just so impressed with the way they manhandled the Green Bay receiver. It was the exact opposite of what you saw with Hayward and Demaryius Thomas, where some guys played off. I mean, the Broncos just said, okay, we're going to jam the heck out of you.
Green Bay lost Shields, which hurt him. big time after 11 snaps. Yeah, I thought Randall was somewhat. Well, I thought he was okay aggressive. I just didn't think Hayward was.
Sure. You know, call me crazy. I thought Demetri Goodson played okay.
Yeah, he did.
He wasn't bad. Too.
No.
And he told me before the game. He said, you know, I'm always prepared mentally to go into a game, but he said I never in the world thought I was going to play in this game.
Hmm. Do you think we'll see Gunter?
Boy. You know, Joe Witt said something last week coming out of the bye. Or before the Denver game? I can't remember. Within the last 2 weeks, Joe Witt said that he really, really wanted to play Gunter against the Chargers. He said that that's what he thought was the best matchup. Gunter, with his length and his size, to be able to jam the guys like Keenan Allen and Floyd off the line of scrimmage. And he said, you know, I get paid a lot of money to make those decisions, and I chickened out. I couldn't do it. I couldn't put Gunter out there. So I don't know. I think we're going to see him soon. And, you know, if Shields can't go, I think maybe this might be the week we see him. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so, too.
Okay.
I'd like to see him.
I would, too.
Yeah, I really would. He's an aggressive guy. He can bump.
And he made
push,
plays all training camp long.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, man. Is there anything else we want to touch on from the Denver game?
No, I think we pretty much covered it.
All right. Well, we will take a short break for a word from our sponsors, and we will be back in a moment.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
All right, so we've covered Denver, and now we're going to shift to this week's opponent, which, you guessed it, another undefeated team in Carolina, 7-0, considered by some to be among the best in the NFC, if not the best. And these two teams played last year, correct?
At Lambeau Field on October 19.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about that game.
The Panthers came into Lambeau with a 3-2-1 record. They were fine. And they got hammered. It was Green Bay 38, Carolina 3 late in the third quarter.
Wow.
Before they kind of called off the dogs. Ended up 38-17. It was really one of the finest performances of the year for the Packers. The Panthers' defense was ranked second at the time. They were just totally helpless against Green Bay. Rodgers looked like $1 million. The ground game was $1 million. The receiving core looked like $1 million. Panthers really couldn't do anything on offense. Cam Newton was just hamstrung, eventually lifted in the fourth quarter to protect him from a savage pass rush. Just Ron Rivera didn't want him to get hurt. I mean, it was a brutal thing.
So that was one of their better games of the season for the Pack last year in terms of dominating?
Yes, completely. McCarthy said, defensively, we needed to stop Cam Newton. He was our focus all week. We have a lot of respect for what he does in that scheme. We were able to get that done.
Boy, they jumped out to a 21-0 lead, huh?
Before the Panthers had a first down.
Holy cow.
Quote, we just got outplayed in every phase of the game, said Newton. Those guys are very fast-flowing guys. They did a great job keeping pressure on us. The Panthers tried to play a 7-man box against Green Bay, but they couldn't stop the run with that. And then when they moved safeties up, they had Antoine Kayson starting at cornerback. He was awful. They had Charles Godfrey at a converted safety who played nickelback that day against Cobb. He got eaten up. Godfrey was cut like 2 days later. You had Roland Harper, as he is now, starting at safety. He was exploited continually. It was as one-sided an affair as I can remember in quite a few years. It was just, it was amazing. I'm just kind of looking at a few of these things. Sean McDermott, I mean, he blitzed 33% of the time. He ended up trying to do that. Nothing happened. Rodgers just read it all, it was a massacre.
Boy, I'm looking at
offense, defense.
I'm looking at this clipping that you have here from your rating the Packers. Not anything below 4 in any phase of the game. 4 out of 5. That's pretty darn good.
Utter annihilation.
Seems kind of like the reverse of what we just saw in Denver.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Have the Panthers improved that much? Let's look at them, Mike.
All right, here we go. Into the scouting report.
All right, they're 7-0. Their big victory was 2 weeks ago at Seattle. Come from behind fashion, right?
Impressive.
The Indianapolis game Monday night, that was kind of a come from behind too at the bitter end. I mean, they led all the way and then had to make some things happen at the end.
I watched the end of that game.
And they won it in OT. 7-0 in the rain. It's supposed to rain Sunday too.
Is it?
Yep, the whole weekend.
Okay.
All right, the Panthers. Cam Newton's doing it. the guy from Auburn who didn't look like he would really mature into a quarterback his first 3-4 years, but he appears to now. He's doing a lot at the line. His balls still sail. He makes some terrible passes. He always will. He can spin a... He spins a pass as good as anybody in the business, Mike.
Really?
He throws these bombs that are just spot on with those huge arcing. He can throw it like 80 yards, 70 yards, who knows, more than far enough. And they just come down. I mean, this Ted Ginn Jr. dropped 2 bombs in that game.
Yep. Yes, he did.
Otherwise, this thing would have been out of reach. He runs the ball. Zone read, triple option, old-fashioned option.
Your kind of offense, Bob.
Well... And he takes hits. He lowers his pads. He drills people. He hasn't been hurt yet. He weighs probably 250, 6'5".
The guys in the locker room yesterday were saying he's almost to a T the same size as Julius Peppers.
Well, Peppers weighs 280, 285.
But, I mean, height and build-wise, okay. Very similar to Peppers.
Okay, carriage and all that. Yeah, I see that.
Which is just nuts to think about. Now think, and this was a question phrased to Casey Hayward. How do you try and tackle that? You know, you can be as willing of a tackler as you want, but how do you tackle Julius Peppers coming at you?
It is a problem. All right, the running back is Jonathan Stewart. No more D'Angelo Williams. Now, the Packers really bottled up Stewart in that game last year. LaTroy Guyon made about three plays at the point of attack, shedding people, short yardage. Guyon was tremendous in that game. Stewart finished 14 for 55, but it was a lot of it at garbage time. When Rivera just threw up his hands, Mike Shula, the coordinator, and just decided to run the ball at the end. That's where a lot of his yards came. It was garbage yards. All right. The receiving corps. They lose Kelvin Benjamin, their number one in training camp with a blown knee. So they got Ted Ginn Jr., who can really run, but he's really, his hands have been, yeah. His hands just aren't good. You got Corey Brown, a rookie, second-year free agent from Ohio State.
Formerly Philly Brown, for those of you who remember him on the Eagles.
Yep. Or at Ohio State. Yeah. Jericho Cotchery. I've always kind of liked him. I mean,
journeyman.
He can't run, but, you know, he's really a smart, tough guy, and he's big. I think he's all right.
Okay.
Devin Funchess, a guy I know. He played at Michigan. I saw him play a lot his last 3 years.
Just taking a while.
He's timid inside. He drops the ball. I don't know. They traded up in the second round for the guy. They feel they need big receivers with big catching radiuses to handle these sailing passes of Cam that won't change. And Funchess is not there yet. He'll play a little bit. Brenton Burson, he's been on that club for a couple, 3 years. He's just a tough old possession guy. Tight end, it all revolves around Greg Olsen. You've seen him, Mike. He can play.
Yes, he can. You know, I remember watching him in college, actually, back when he was at Miami when I was really young. I mean, he's just tremendous. And he can, you know, he's got the speed to play almost like a wide receiver, the guys on the Packers were saying yesterday. And what's so impressive to me is for as many places as the Packers use their tight ends, you could argue that the Panthers line their guy, Olsen, up in as many possible locations as you can within an offense. He's tremendously versatile, and, you know, he's a solid player. Can he run block?
No, but he's not really in many occasions to do that.
Right.
He's okay on whams coming across the formation, but right in line, you know, hand down,
yeah.
Not really.
Okay.
He ran 4.51 coming out of Miami.
4.5, wow.
Really okay. Fast at 2.45 then, you know.
Yeah.
So he's the guy that he's going to get the ball, and Cam's going to get it to him. They're going to be looking for him.
He was over 1,000 yards last year, and so far this year he leads the team in receptions, receiving yards, and receiving touchdowns.
Yep. All right, the third down back is Fozzie Whitaker. He's a guy. You have Mike Tolbert, kind of a fullback running back who would replace Stewart. He's a tough guy.
Yeah, he moves well for a big man, I must say. He's got some feet on him.
All right, let's look at the line. On paper, not very good. It looks like Ryan Khalil, their best player, the center, won't play with an injury. Andrew Norwell wrecked his hamstring early in that Monday night game. Looks like he won't play. 2 starters down right there, so they're going to go from left to right. Michael Orr, the subject of that movie and book. He's been cut on the street. He's okay. Amini Silatolu was their third-string left guard. He's in there. He was a second-round pick. I remember writing a lot about him before the draft 4 years ago. He's a big mauler kind of guy, slow on the trigger. The center's Fernando Velasco, just a physical old 8-9-year vet. He's not bad. He did a pretty good job with the shotgun snap in the rain the other night, too. That was impressive. Trey Turner is a good player, the second-year guard from LSU. Nasty, a finisher, really runs well. They pull him a lot, like him. Mike Remmers, boy. This guy's starting, I can't remember, five teams or something like that. They went to him down the stretch last year when they really had no, they were out of options. And the guy, I don't really, short arms, small hands, but he is playing all right. And he's doing a pretty good job for Cam in this offense. And it's amazing how what they're getting out of this player. So that's their offense. I don't know where they rank. Who cares about all that? They're moving the football and they're winning.
Yeah, they find a way to win. Newton's, I mean, obviously that comes back to Newton and Olsen, really. But, you know, they figure it out. They figure it out. It'll be interesting to see what they can do against this Packers defense that's been gashed for over 500 in the last two games.
Yep. All right, on defense, Sean McDermott, a disciple of Jim Johnson at the Eagles. That means he's a 4-3 guy, overload pressures, strange blitzes, exotic blitzes. He does a lot of things. The Packers picked him apart last year in Green Bay. Everything he tried, Rodgers was on top of, and it was just probably one of his more frustrating games. All right, the D-line. Mario Addison is a big figure here. Their best pass rusher, Charles Johnson, is on designated IR, has been for a month. Mario Addison is their second-best outside pass rusher. He's limited yesterday, Wednesday in practice. Don't know if he'll play. He's a pretty good hard upfield rusher. They could use him. You know, they lost Hardy, obviously. They got rid of him in the offseason. So, you know, with Johnson and Hardy, that's what really turned that defense around for a couple of years, and now neither of them will play Sunday. All right. They made a deal for Jared Allen after they lost Johnson. They shipped a sixth-round pick, was it?
I can't remember.
Forgot. So, Jared, we know Jared. I like the guy.
You do?
Personally, I like the way he plays. Yeah, I've never met him, never talked to him. I like the way he plays. Yeah, he's a pass rusher, but I don't think he's a selfish pass rusher. He's 6'6", and he's not that thick, but I think I like his bull rush always, that two-handed push. He gets leverage. He can't really get around the corner, but he can threaten the corner and then come back underneath. Bakhtiari knows this player, but I don't care. It's a tough assignment. They just played, what, two months ago in Chicago? Allen's not a bad get, boy. And they're looking to win a Super Bowl, and they made a deal like that for Allen.
How much more comfortable does he look? Even though he's new to this Carolina system, does he look much more comfortable than he did at that outside backer role he had in the strange 3-4 that he was trying to adapt to?
Completely more comfortable, Mike. Okay. That's just wouldn't work. You know, that just wasn't doing. And the Bears realized that and got something for the guy.
Yep.
All right, on the other side, if Addison doesn't play, you got Coney Ealy, a second-round pick. Yeah, first, I think he's a high second last year in 14. Just watching him and talking to people, I kind of like him.
Okay.
He's got some strength. He's got some explosion. He's a threat. All right, inside, three technique, K'Wan Short. And this guy was what? I don't even know those. I don't pay much attention to those awards. Player of the month or some goofy thing. But all I know is he's rushing the passer well. He can beat guards. He can beat Sitton and Lang if they're not careful, if they're one-on-one. I'm sure he'll see a lot of double team because he's a lot better than Star Lotulelei.
Yes, Lotulelei.
Lotulelei, okay. Star was the 14th pick in the draft about 4 years ago. Limited range. He's really huge upper body strength. You don't see a lot of playmaking.
Yeah, yesterday in the locker room, Corey Linsley, the center for the Packers, said that, you know, Short and Lotulelei, just tremendous strength on the inside, really strong physical guys. So, you know, he's anticipating them to really try and use that and get leverage there. You know, they're not necessarily renowned rushers or anything like that, but he said you can't sleep on how strong they are.
Now, replacing Star on passing downs was DeJuan Edwards. A really good veteran, again, that I've liked over the years. He's been several places. I think the guy can always rush the passer. He replaced Star in passing downs. He's out with a high ankle sprain. He's been missed 2 weeks. I think that's a blow for them. So injuries are a factor. Johnson's down. Addison's uncertain. Edwards probably not going to play. Their depth is gone. But they've kind of hung on, and they continue to pressure. McDermott's good at getting pressure. All right, at backers, you got Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis. They play every snap.
Every snap.
So they're never dime. They're always nickel with these two guys. Kuechly's tremendous. The Packers got after him good last year before he got ejected. He got ejected from that game. But I didn't think, I thought they were blocking him very well in that game last year. Smart, tough, big, can do it all. Thomas Davis.
Three ACL tears in the same knee.
I can
relate. I had one, but I had three surgeries, but only one ACL on the same knee. And I just, I can't even imagine. The guy's got to be superhuman.
Has anybody ever done this before?
I think I read a quote from him saying he's believed to be the first pro athlete to do it, but I don't know if that's certain. But I remember him discussing it on SportsCenter.
Okay. Davis can run. I mean, he was kind of a safety in Clemson, I believe, somewhere, but he played a lot of safety there. And it took him several years to learn how to play linebacker, but now that he has, he's kind of a tackling machine. Not very good in coverage.
Okay.
If you have a tight end, you can run that. He's going to problem turning his hip, flipping his hips, and trying to run with a guy. He doesn't do that well.
Well, the Packers don't really have a tight end to go vertical. They can try with Richard Rodgers, but he doesn't have the speed to do it.
Right. So, but Kennard Backman does.
Will he play?
Don't know. They'll break him loose this week.
We'll see.
All right, so Davis is a heck of a player. On the other side, the guy doesn't play much, really. That'd be Shaq Thompson, that kind of rookie special teamer from Pac-10. He hasn't done much. The good backup, the number four guy, is A.J. Klein. This guy's he's pretty active, Mike. He's from Kimberly, Wisconsin, 30 miles away from that fantastic Kimberly football program. I kind of like A.J. Klein. Not bad. All right, that's the front seven.
It's not bad. It's a decent group.
It's not great, but it's not bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, let's move to the secondary where this season they've made their money.
All right, the right corner is Josh Norman. He could be the first special team Pro Bowl cornerback at Carolina for 19 years since Eric Davis in 96. Norman's got like four picks, two return for touchdowns. He's kind of a flaky guy. A lot of scouts said that about him before the draft in 2012. He lasted until the fourth, I believe. Norman, man, he's playing with so much confidence right now. It just jumps off the tape at you.
Really does.
He's quick. He runs a lot better than that 4.61 that hurt him in the draft at the combine. He's tackling better than he did at Coastal Carolina. He looks like a heck of a player right now. He stays outside. He's not in the slot. He won't be on Cobb if Cobb is in the slot.
I want to read this quote from Ron Rivera. I asked him yesterday on the conference call about Josh, and I thought his quote was pretty telling on a number of levels. And I said, what were some of the traits that you saw in him as a young player that you thought would allow him to turn into a solid player? And he laughed and he said his confidence. He's a very confident football player. He works hard at his craft, you know. It wasn't easy when he first got here because he had a lot of success in college at Coastal Carolina, a smaller program. He had a lot of success. It carried over initially, you know. I think the hardest thing for him was just adjusting to the strictness of the way that we do things. You've got to play within the scheme, and there's not a lot of opportunity for you to do your own thing. I think once he adjusted to that, he's really started to flourish. He understands the whole concept of what we do on defense. He'll make an occasional mistake, but I'll tell you, he's probably one of the most confident football players I've ever been around.
Wow.
Pretty good quote.
Very good quote.
And I think that comment about it needing to adjust to things is not only a schematic comment, I think it's also a maturity adjustment too, where he realized he's not the man anymore the way he was at Coastal Carolina, and he really needs to be part of a system. And now that he is, he's turned into one of the better corners, at least in the NFC, if not the whole league.
Yeah. Rivera also coached. He's an interesting guy. He played for the Bears, coached for the Bears, was in Philly with McDermott as assistants to Jim Johnson. So he hired McDermott. They're on the same page. He's an interesting guy, Ron Rivera. Okay, the other corner, man, what a night and day difference. Charles Tillman, the old Bear, that, of course, Rivera knows, coached, was on that staff a little bit in his early years, starting in 03. Tillman, you know, he's the all-time stripper, fumble getter-outer. I don't know. I mean, I thought he had retired twice with these injuries he had the last 2 years. I was stunned in like August when I looked at their depth chart and saw him there.
Well, he's still got, you know, he had that triceps injury, right, when he was with the Bears. And he's got this giant brace on his arm that makes him look like he's, you know, half machine almost out there. But he gets it done.
He can't really play man, not without a pass rush.
Right.
He's a good bump guy. He always played cover two in Chicago. He'd get up and bump, and then he'd hit cover about 20 yards deep. I don't know. I don't really know how they're doing it, but they are. Benet Benwickery.
One of my favorite names in the NFL. I love that name. I think it's awesome.
He's the nickelback. He's okay. He's no Bradley Roby from Denver. He's okay, Benwickery. He's got some size. He plays a little faster than he timed. But he's beatable. All right, the safeties. Boy, these are retreads.
Really, really are.
They're 7-0 with retreads. Kurt Coleman's, this is his third team. He's from Ohio State. Ran 4.56 coming out. Pretty darn good time for a safety. Doesn't play to that now. You know, he's deceptively tough. He will really come and strike you, which is impressive. I assume he's a smart guy. And he's the free safety. The strong safety. Packer fans will have seen this guy many, many times over the years. That's Roman Harper. 9 years in New Orleans, second year in Carolina.
Full head of gray hair on Roman Harper.
Mike, in that game here last year at Lambeau, he just got exposed. I mean, I've seen him get exposed by the Packers in 2011 on opening Thursday nighter.
When he was with the Saints, right?
Yeah. He's been exposed for years. When I wrote the Super Bowl book, people were talking about that. And I remember Greg Williams in an interview with me was defending him, you know, saying what else he could do, the intangibles. And I get that, the leadership. He's kind of uncanny with his instincts. He will end up in unforeseen places. Rodgers has to be careful. But Rodgers has exploited this guy too because he cannot run. I don't know what he is. I mean, I don't want to exaggerate. Could he be 4.75? Could it be 4.8?
Oh, man.
Watch him Sunday. No. It could be. So he's in the box. Last year they tried to play him back at the hash, and that didn't work. McDermott tried that. I don't know. They play Trey Boston some. He's a pretty good athlete, and he's a big guy, and he's got some straight line ability. He's kind of a tough guy. So that's their defense.
Okay, how about the special teams?
All right, Graham Gano. He beat the Packers in 2010 when he was a Redskin from 33 in OT. He beat the Colts the other night.
Yes, he did. In the rain. That's not easy to kick on that surface.
He missed an extra point in the rain.
Yes, he did.
He has got a big leg, and he is, I would say, a below-average accurate kicker.
Okay.
Brad Nortman has improved. He's a former Badger, his fourth year. He's not great, but he has improved a little bit. Okay, Ted Ginn Jr. is the punt returner. I happen to be at the Ohio State at Michigan State game during the bye week in like 07 maybe.
Okay.
And I saw Ted bring one back against the Spartans about 80 yards. I couldn't believe it. He fielded this pretty high punt, and people were around him, and he went straight upfield and was just over.
He was electric back in college. I mean, he still got some speed, but in college he was just electric.
We were in the upper deck. Within 1 second, it was over. And he still can run.
Yes, he can.
Okay. The kickoff returner is Fozzie Whitaker. He's okay. The long snapper, former Packer. How about this, Mike? J.J. Jansen. He had the job here. He was going to be the guy, and he got hurt in the exhibition finale. Torn PCL.
When are we talking?
September of 08.
08, okay.
So then the Packers tried out three long snappers, one of whom was Mr. Brett Good. Brett got the job, and he's been there ever since. Jansen is really good. I know that. Special teams coaches have told me that. Two guys have told me that over the years. He's a really good snapper. Their coverage teams are just okay. They got a new promoted head coach or coordinator, Bruce DeHaven. So that's the Panthers.
All right.
What do you think?
Well, I don't know what to make of them. In some senses, I'm kind of baffled that they're 7-0. It just doesn't seem to make sense. My impression of the Panthers is that overall, 1-53, they don't have the greatest talent in the world. But I think that their 6 or 7 elite players, I think they do a really good job of building around those guys in terms of what they want to do schematically. I think they find ways to rely on their 6 or 7 elite contributors, and in doing so, they're able to overcome some depth issues at other areas. In other words, they figure out ways to allow Kuechly and Davis to just maul on defense. They find ways to get Greg Olsen the ball, even though teams know that he's basically their only true threat every single snap. They find ways for Cam Newton to run and find ways to make sure he doesn't get hurt while he's running. I think, you know, it's been good.
I agreed all the way.
All right, well, we will move on from the Panthers. We'll take a short break to hear from our sponsors, and we'll return with some questions from you guys.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
All right, and we're back with some questions from you guys, as we do every week. What do we got here? The first one, Bob.
All right, Mike, this is from Handsome Pete, P-E-A-T. Richard Rodgers has struggled. Would giving some of his snaps to Prillo, Backman, or Henry be an improvement?
Well, Richard Rodgers has definitely struggled. You know, he struggles at times as a blocker. He doesn't have the speed to stretch a defense over the top. And despite his good hands, he's had a couple that he's dropped in recent weeks. I don't know if necessarily splitting a ton of reps with guys like Perillo, Backman, or Henry is a good idea, but I would like to see Backman in particular sprinkled in a little bit, because I think he's got the speed and the athleticism to do things that Richard Rodgers can't. And I know that he's not ready in certain regards. He's still learning. He's still a rookie. But I'd like to see him at least maybe take a shot or two to Backman at some point and see if it just opens up things for the offense a little bit. But he's been inactive in recent weeks because they've gone with Perillo ahead of him. So we'll have to see what it looks like on Sunday. The next question comes from Tim Brever, B-R-E-V-E-R. Thanks for the question, Tim. This one goes to Bob. How realistic is the scenario in which Eddie Lacy is cut during this offseason?
Cut, huh, Tim? I would say unrealistic would be that scenario. Lacy will have another year in his contract in 2016. I think he'll play better down the stretch than he has so far, assuming he's healthy and this ankle doesn't hinder him all season. And I think they'll probably be running the ball more and his numbers will improve.
Okay.
All right.
One more.
Andy Deal wants to know, Mike, is Micah Hyde the new A.J. Hawk? Too slow and unathletic to be out there, but coaches love him for some reason.
Well, I think Micah Hyde is a player that any coach would really like to have on his team just from the versatility. He can return punts. He can play corner. He can play safety. So I think that he's a guy that serves a role on this team. Now, he may not be best suited for covering tight ends the way we've seen the last couple weeks, but as Bob mentioned earlier in the podcast, there's things some of the linebackers like Nate Palmer can do to help him a little bit. So, you know, he's done that role in the past. He's served it well as the nickelback for this team. He gives them an option as a backup safety who's competent, as we saw with Morgan Burnett out injured for a lot of the games so far this season. So he's got a role on this team, and just because he struggled in a couple games doesn't mean, I don't think yet, that he's become to the point where A.J. Hawk was last year, really struggling with, you know, so many injuries in his career, couldn't run anymore. I don't think we've gotten to that point quite yet. And with that, I think we are about to wrap up the podcast, but we forgot one important thing. We never discussed my music at the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah, that was news to me, that music. Tell me about it.
So I was a big jazz fan growing up, still am. I played in jazz bands all my life. I was a drummer, and if I didn't live in an apartment complex where the walls are thin, I would still be a drummer. So that song was called Lady Chatterley's Mother, and it's by Jerry Mulligan and his jazz band from an album called Live at the Village Vanguard. The Village Vanguard was a popular jazz club that had all kinds of tremendous artists come through there with the big jazz booms in the middle of the 20th century, and they recorded a lot of live records there. So that was Lady Chatterley's Mother, and the reason I like Jerry Mulligan, who's the leader of the band, is because he plays the baritone saxophone. And there's not a lot of jazz musicians that play the baritone saxophone as front runners for a group. You see a lot of alto saxophones with Cannonball Adderley and guys like that. You see a lot of tenor saxophones with Sonny Rollins and John Coltrane. Not a lot of bari sax. And it's a cool, really low-down sound, almost sounds like a bullfrog. And if you can play it well, it's really cool. So that was Lady Chatterley's Mother by Jerry Mulligan. And hopefully you guys will check it out. We're going to play a few more seconds of that on the way out. But first, we'd like to thank our sponsors once again, Cannon and Dunphy, for all of their support and endorsement of our Packers coverage. And again, we encourage you to reach out to them if you have any legal needs. And with that, I think we are just about to get to the 50-minute mark, which is our point to sign off. We're on the road to Carolina this week.
Yep, let's go down there.
All right, sounds good. We will talk to you guys next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.